Don't do that to your children, please, parents. St. Paul wrote this to the Galatians, and it's in Galatians 4, 6, quote, "And because you are sons, God hath sent the Spirit of His Son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father." Our Lady of Guadalupe told St. Juan Diego, quote, "Am I not here who am your mother?" I'll give the rest of that quote later, by the way. It's important in relation to fear here. These images of fatherhood and motherhood must have positive connotations in children's minds. Then holy, chaste, and filial fear will be more possible for them. It is a certain truth of the spiritual life that we can pray for those spiritual goods that we need. So a suggested prayer for the gift of fear of the Lord comes from the Psalms. And it goes like this. It's from Psalm 118, verse 120. It's the longest psalm in the book of Psalms. "Pierce thou my flesh with thy fear, for I am afraid of thy judgments." So there we've considered where fear should be in the spiritual life. And if you want to get all those references that I just gave, there'll be a link from the Reconquest and on a page to an article that I wrote called Fear, Holy and Unholy. But what I'd like to do now is pivot and talk about the manipulation of fear that's been long going on in advertising and in the press. And which is kind of the prequel, the backdrop against which the current corona shamdemic fear is placed. So there's an article called "The Manipulation of the American Mind," and it talks about "The Manipulation of the American Mind: Edward Bernays and the Birth of Public Relations." This is on a website, and I'll have a link to it, called theunboundspirit.com. The article is by a man named Richard Gunderman. Now, I have to say about Edward Bernays, he was a nephew of Sigmund Freud, and he used a lot of Freud's ideas and sort of weaponized them for propaganda purposes. In fact, he wrote a book called Propaganda. He weaponized them for propaganda purposes, and also after World War I, where he worked with Wilson in propagandizing for the war, he also repurposed those very principles, the sort of weaponized Freudian stuff, in what he himself called public relations. He's the one who came up with that term. Which itself is kind of manipulative, calling it public relations. By the way, E. Michael Jones, in his book that I already mentioned, Libido Dominandi, talks about Edward Bernays at some length in the book. So you can find multiple treatments of this guy. So I'm quoting from that article, again, by Richard Gunderman. "Often referred to as the father of public relations, Bernays in 1928 published his seminal work, Propaganda, in which he argued that public relations is not a gimmick but a necessity." Listen to this, quote, "The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country." He's talking about the United States. He was an Austrian, but he's writing in America. He grew up here. "We are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes formed, and our ideas suggested largely by men we have never heard of. It is they who pull the wires that control the public mind." End quote from Bernays, continuing with the article from Gunderman. Bernays came by his beliefs honestly. Born in Austria in 1891, the year Sigmund Freud published one of his earliest papers, Bernays was also Freud's nephew twice over. His mother was Freud's sister Anna, and his father, Eli Brandeis, was the brother of Freud's wife, Martha. The year after his birth, the Bernays family moved to New York, and Bernays later graduated from Cornell with a degree in agriculture. But instead of farming, he chose a career in journalism, eventually helping the Woodrow Wilson administration promote the idea that U.S. efforts in World War I were intended to bring democracy to Europe. Having seen how effective propaganda could be during war, Bernays wondered whether it might prove equally useful during peacetime. Yet propaganda had acquired a somewhat pejorative connotation, which would further be magnified during World War II. So Bernays promoted the term public relations. Drawing on the insights of his uncle Sigmund, a relationship that Bernays was always quick to mention, he developed an approach he dubbed the engineering of consent. The engineering of consent. He provided leaders the means to, quote, control and regiment the masses according to our will without their knowing about it, end quote. To do so, it was necessary to appeal not to the rational part of the mind, but to the unconscious. Now, this would, of course, be the id. It's E. Michael Jones. I believe the id doesn't exist. It's bad anthropology. But this is what E. Michael Jones said, is just the passions. I think he's right. I mean, I think the id as such doesn't exist, but it's just Freud's name for the passions. So the unconscious. This is Brother Andre Marie. You're listening to Reconquest. We are on episode number 300 and, no, sorry, I zipped ahead at 100. 238. We're talking about don't be controlled by fear. So moving right along through the article by Gunderman. So we don't appeal to the rational part in public relations and in media manipulation, but to the unconscious, okay? This precisely is bad rhetoric, right? That's what I was talking about before, right? Good rhetoric appeals, there's logos, there's ethos, there's pathos in that order, huh? Here we've got pathos, 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 and they're calling it the unconscious. Continuing with Gunderman's article, Bernays acquired an impressive list of clients, ranging from manufacturers such as General Electric, Procter & Gamble, and the American Tobacco Company, to media outlets like CBS, and even politicians such as Calvin Coolidge. To counteract President Coolidge's stiff image, Bernays organized pancake breakfasts and White House concerts with Al Jolson and other Broadway performers. With Bernays' help, Coolidge won the 1924 election. Bernays also used fear to sell products. Listen to this. I laughed when I read this. This is so current. Dixie cups. Bernays, for Dixie Cups, by the way, of course, Dixie Cups is a bad name. I don't know what we call them today, Dixies, but the Dixie Chicks just became the Chicks now. They never had any merit as far as I'm concerned, but now they have even less, and what they end up with something purely pejorative in the Chicks. But okay, so we're talking about Dixie Cups. For Dixie Cups, Bernays launched a campaign to scare people into thinking that only disposable cups were sanitary. Imagine that. So you scare people to think that other cups or other drinking vessels aren't sanitary because, after all, other people have their mouths on them. Yuck. And germs, germs, germs. Sound familiar? As part of this campaign, he founded the Committee for the Study and Promotion of the Sanitary Dispensing of Food and Drink. He started a complete shell organization to launch an advertising program for Dixie Cups, so that people would spend insane amounts of money on wax-coated paper cups that fall apart very easily. Enough of the quote from the Gunderman article. It's a very informative article, by the way. I'll have a link to it from the Reconquest.net page for this show. Fear in advertising is very, very common. There was a famous attack ad in 1964 that helped to get Lyndon Johnson elected. You can find that ad on YouTube. It helped him to beat Barry Goldwater. It's the Daisy commercial. So it showed a little girl, you know, picking petals off of a daisy, and she's counting up to 10, and very cutely she messes up the numbering. I think she reverses 6 and 7. But she counts up to 10, and then the daisy's suddenly empty of petals. And then she looks up, and there's this eerie freeze frame, right? And you see her cute little face with freckles on it with a slightly disturbed look on it. I imagine that the director had to work a hard time to get this cute little kid to look eerie, but he did it, dang it. And then as soon as the freeze frame happens, as well as maybe a second or two of looking at her face, and then you hear a countdown from 10 down to 0, and then you see a mushroom cloud. Well, what was the effect of that? What was the purpose of it? Well, they were framing Barry Goldwater as a warmonger. And at the end, you get, this is all in black and white, it's 1964. And at the end, you get on a black screen, white letters promoting Lyndon Johnson saying, you know, don't stay home on election day. You can't afford it. It was clearly an appeal to fear. If you vote for Barry Goldwater, or if you don't come out and positively vote for Lyndon Johnson, we're all going to get nuked to death, including the cute little, you know, freckle-faced girl that's miscounting her daisy petals. That's a perfect example, and a particularly, you know, disgusting example of fear being used to sell things. But politicians are great at this. You know, if you don't vote for me, we'll go to war. If you don't vote for me, you know, the enemy will invade us, and because he'll be a wimp on foreign policy.